This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
Please remember that you can check out Kelly and Company on demand by going to your favorite podcasting platform and finding us there in podcast form. Of course, we're available in full show format as well as in segmented out bits that might be easier for you to go through, digest, and share. Of course, if you rate, review, and subscribe, we much appreciate it. And we really are thankful for all our listenerships live or on podcast platform. Also, the first repeat of the show. Ooh, that was a throwback. The only repeat of the show is at 5 p.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio's weekdays. So just an hour after the live rendition. So on Mondays, we like to talk a little rights with Danielle McLaughlin. We call this segment, Know Your Rights.
Let's examine questions that can't be answered by a simple yes or no. Join me, Danielle McLaughlin, when we talk about how freedoms collide on Know Your Rights.
You are hosting with me today, Danielle, but we thought we'd get into some real interesting conversation here and some updates, actually, because on December 31st, there was a very important settlement between the Canadian government and First Nations families. This is to acknowledge the discrimination faced by First Nations children who have suffered under the child welfare system. So do you want to tell us a little bit about this, maybe get into some background?
For sure, Ramya. You know, if for anyone who's been following this, this has been going on, this particular case, for a shockingly long time. To kind of make it succinct, there have been a number of problems. One has been that in order for many First Nations families to get access to the medical care that their children need, they have had to give their children up to the system so that they couldn't keep them home and get the medical care because it wasn't available in their communities. And there was a fight, basically, that was going on between provinces and the federal government. Now, you might know that the welfare of Indigenous peoples, First Nations peoples, Inuit people, is considered to be a federal issue. In other words, schools, for example, are paid for out of the federal purse. And healthcare normally is a provincial issue, as is education, normally a provincial issue. But if you happen to be a person who is lives on a reserve, if you're a First Nations person, it's expected that the federal government will pick up the tab instead of the province. Well, of course, because healthcare is a provincial issue, in general, people go to provincial hospitals. So who's supposed to pay for that? Well, we've seen a situation in which children have been caught in the middle, where families have had to give up their children in order to get them the kind of care that they've needed. It's been a horrible situation. Even worse than that situation is the fact that the infighting between the federal and provincial governments has caused an issue where nobody was paying for the needs of these special needs children in most cases. Well, December the 31st, after many court battles back and forth, the federal government decided that they would stop fighting it in court. They have been going up against First Nations Child and Family Caring Society of Canada for many years, saying, no, we're not going to do what the previous court ordered. We're not going to do what the previous court ordered. Finally, they decided not to take this to court once more, and they have come down with a $40 billion settlement, $40 billion to be divided in half. Half of that amount is to go to the families who have been so terribly impacted by this issue, the other half to reform the child welfare system so that this won't continue to happen. It's been it's been something of a disaster that has had a deep and profound effect on families and particularly on children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no, absolutely. And there's, I don't know if it, discrepancy is really the word, but, you know, like you're saying, between federal and provincial and who takes it and passing the buck and all these things. So now with the settlement, is it still considered in the works?
Well, yes, it is, actually, because this is, you know, it's on paper. It has not actually been, it's not a binding agreement at this point. Okay. Every expectation is that it will become a binding agreement. But because the First Nations Child and Family Caring Society has had to fight this in court again and again and again, I don't think they believe it's final until they actually see the cash. It's, you know, it's quite worrying. And Cindy Blackstock, who leads that organization, you know, is very glad that this decision has been brought about, but she's still holding her breath a bit, you know, to see what's going to happen. First Nations Child and Family Caring Services established something called Jordan's Principle. I don't know if you've
ever heard
of it.
We talked a bit about it here on the show before with you, I think,
yes,
as well.
That's right.
Yes, okay.
And what this principle basically says is when there is a dispute about who's going to pay for a child's needs, whoever is first on it pays the whole thing, and then they can fight later after the child has got the care that she or he needs. And this came about because of a child. This, in my view, is one of the saddest stories. There was a little boy named Jordan River Anderson, and he was born in 1999 to a family at Norway House Cree Nation, and he was born with serious medical needs, and there were no appropriate services on his reserve, and so the family had to surrender him to the provincial care in order for him to get the medical treatment that he needed. So after he spent his first 2 years of life in the hospital, he could have gone into care at a specialized foster home close to the medical facilities in Winnipeg. However, for the next two more years, when you think about the life of a small child, Aboriginal Affairs and Northern Development Canada, Health Canada, and the province of Manitoba argued over who should pay for Jordan's foster home costs. And so Jordan remained in hospital, and they were still arguing about it when Jordan died at the age of 5, having spent entire life living in the hospital. So the principle, which is named for this unfortunate child, it says, you know, child's needs first. Worry about who pays for it later. You can take it to court. You can, you know, you can fight all you want, so long as the child's been cared for and has received his needs. You know, in my opinion, this is a tragedy that did not need to happen. You know, this child could have been living in a supportive family-like situation. He could have thrived, you know, in foster care, or even perhaps, we don't know, back with his biological family. He got none of that given to him. There was no opportunity. So, you know, when people say, you know, the mistreatment of Indigenous peoples, you know, was a long time ago, it wasn't a long time ago.
It really
it's
wasn't.
Now.
And we're still arguing about the same things, Danielle, and asking the same questions,
yes.
Whether it was 10 years ago, 100 years ago, or now. Like, why does the government seem to act so slowly, even when the risks are so great in a hospitalized child, looking for some care and facility and support, and yet, you know, it takes his death for us to even implement something like this and even understand it moving forward from that point.
Well, that's right. And quite honestly, even his death didn't do it, because there have been numbers of memoranda of understanding based on Jordan's principles. And yet the government has gone to court to oppose payments again and again. So in addition to the 2009 federal response, there have been memoranda in 2018 between the federal government and the province of Alberta and 11 First Nations. And in 2020, there was another memorandum signed between Canada and the Southern Chiefs Organization in Manitoba. The thing about, you know, all of this going back and forth and back and forth through the courts is Canada is a signatory to the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People and on the rights of the child as well. So, you know, why have they spent so much time and money fighting against this decision and other movements, you know, following many of the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action? It makes so little sense. It kind of reminds me, I'm sure many of our audience members have heard from David Lepofsky, who tried for so long to get the TTC, the Toronto Transit Commission, to simply have announcements made so that people with low vision or blindness would know which stops were being reached, and they would know where to get off, and also to have them up in print for people who were deaf or hard of hearing. The government took him to court again and again. There was a human rights decision that said, yes, have to do it, reasonable accommodation. The province said no. You know, by the time that it finally happened, the government had spent so much money fighting it through courts, they could have paid to having to, you know, to have done
to get
this
the project
thing
done
over and over, right? And the same thing with Jordan's principle. If they hadn't bothered to fight, if they just said, this is the right thing to do, let's do it, they would have spent so little money in the courts and with lawyers and with all of the argy-bargy that, you know, even possibly Jordan himself might have benefited from it. But he's not the only child who has been put in such a terrible situation by the way in which the governments have looked at Indigenous children's welfare. And so, you know, having this human rights tribunal decision, you know, finally acknowledged, and the decision said straight out, this is discriminatory. This is an act of discrimination. And Canada, you know, without using the word ashamed, I think basically they said the same. They you know, here is what Patty Hydew said. She said, for too long, the government of Canada did not adequately fund or support the wellness of First Nations families and children. And she said, no compensation amount can make up for the trauma people have experienced. But these agreements in principle acknowledge to survivors and their families the harm and pain caused by the discrimination. And there's that word, discrimination, in funding and services. And I think that this is really important that the government, first of all, acknowledge that they have been discriminating against these families, that, you know, they have caused poverty, they have caused trauma, they have caused pain, you know, when it would have been so much, let's face it, less expensive to provide the shelter, the education, the medical care, the food that these people need. So, you know, if they had not been Indigenous families, the other provincial child welfare systems would have covered this in a flash. Right. So you can see that that because these are First Nations families and children, they really got the least care that they possibly could. Yeah. And I remember hearing about this years ago and wondering, how can the government keep going to court over this? It's shocking.
Right. And now, you know, after the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation and after all the call to action points, recommendations and everything else that they're, the plea, right, from Truth and Reconciliation Canada coming out, it drives me crazy that we're dragging our feet on everything still. I mean, it's like we're still, the government is still wondering why we need to make these changes, why we need to make some decisions and quickly, because people's lives are at stake. And you know what? At this point, like you're saying with some of the representatives who are keeping their fingers crossed, holding their breath about whether this settlement is actually going to go through, is because there's just so much distrust in our country and in the government. And just that, you know, you saying that the stuff is going to be taken care of is just not enough anymore. Why aren't we moving forward fast enough?
Oh, for heaven's sake. And, you know, one of the things Cindy Blackstock said, and I tend to agree with her, she said that the federal government is a repeat offender against First Nations children.
Yeah.
You know, if you look, if you look at it that way and you say, you know, we really, you know, not only are people supposed to be getting benefits, they need to be protected from the government that is taking away children and then not treating them equitably. So my hope, and that's pretty much all it is at this point, is that this will hurt enough that people will say, you know, we shouldn't be having to pay out $40 billion to people. We should be, you know, giving them the services they need directly up front, just the way we give it to every other child. Yeah. So, you know, I am very hopeful that, you know, after all these memoranda of understanding, you know, the one of the reasons there have been so many is that the federal government needs to have a memorandum of understanding with each province and territory. So, you know, but hopefully they will all be in accord and they will all acknowledge Jordan's principle and make sure that none of the children will be left in the lurch, that we won't allow this to happen again in any way. So
again,
it's an interim step. Yeah. It's an interim step, but we're very hopeful that this will be the end of a particularly ugly period in Canadian history.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And moving from these, you know, in a very tactile way towards some kind of actual positive relationship with our First Nations communities means that we can move towards something a little better. You know,
it's let us all hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a lot. Thanks, Danielle, for bringing it to us and not just updating us, but giving us the deep dive into what the settlement process is thus far.
Thanks, Ramya.
That was Know Your Rights with Danielle McLaughlin, and we were chatting about the settlement between the Government of Canada and the First Nations Child and Family Caring Services and looking more deeply into what this means for us right now. We're going to take a break and come back, wrap up the show, and find out what's coming up on tomorrow's edition of Now with Dave Brown. This is Kelly and Company.
You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.